Hello everyone, before we get started, we want to do one last shout out to our sponsors of this show this week. Firstly, ATB Financial, who plays a very large role in helping to create and support the Alberta Podcast Network, supported by ATB, and in doing so, supporting our show. They're community leaders, they're engaged in what is the happenings of our city, of our province, and they want to build financial solutions to meet those needs. We were very, very proud to say the letters ATB every time we did an ad on our show for them, and that still does not change on our last episode. Thank you again to ATB Financial for helping to support podcasters and Albertans. And of course, we have to thank the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB, for their support throughout this wonderful journey that was the High Level Showdown. We were very proud to be one of the first podcasts, or part of the first class of podcasts that joined the network, and the unflinching support from Karen Unland and the great people at the Alberta Podcast Network helped us through our highs and our lows, our challenges and our successes. And we wouldn't have been able to have any of those successes if it wasn't for the wonderful team at the Alberta Podcast Network, which is powered by ATB. They're helping Albertans think about their dreams, build podcasts about their dreams, and then get those podcasts out to other Albertans and all around the world. They're supporting local content, and you should be following what they're doing because it's an outstanding organization, and we are so, so proud to have been a part of it for, well, as long as we have. Anyway, enjoy the show.
Oh god, it's so funny.
Alright, ready?
Yeah.
Are you gonna
tweet? Yeah! Hello, amazing. Welcome to the High Level Showdown episode
150. Hey! Hey!
Look at that slow zoom with a touchpad. Thank you so much for being here, guys. This
thank
is
you,
really
thank
special. As all of you, or many of you may know, this is the final episode of the High Level Showdown, a show that has been part of my life and Michael's life for about 3.5 years, and Sharon, yours for about 1.5 years now.
I listened before I was on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You guys have always had a special place in my heart.
It's true. She was our number one listener. Yeah. And
yeah, how many times did she ask, when are you going to invite me on the show?
Yeah. Come on.
And we asked you and then you stayed, which was great. So we're going to do kind of a special episode, this final one. One of the most talked about, the ones that we enjoy doing the most, is our year-end podcast episodes, and that's where we pick select topics and put forward nominees is on those topics. So this year, or this time, we're going to be doing best politician, worst politician, and political story of the year.
What do you mean by best politician?
Well, this is where you have to make a determination. So we have ahead of time defined these categories, because in previous episodes there's been debate about whether we were looking for like the best person, as in they were a good person, or best politician, as in
you
they
won't
were
find any
maybe
politician that fits that category.
And usually politicians that are the most successful are evil. So like last year, a nominee for best politician was Vladimir Putin, because he had a good year, not because he was a good guy.
Yeah, and you chose Jason Kenney last year as well, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. He did have a very good year.
He
last
did.
Year.
So.
And then,
so we're measuring best politician by success.
Yeah.
And then the same goes for worst politician as well, too. So they could be generally a good person, someone that we maybe agree with ideology. But if they had a bad year, they had a bad year.
That's right. Right? Otherwise, yep. Obviously, there's a slew of dictators we could choose. That's the obvious. That's the obvious.
Lots of dictators. Right,
for the worst politician. So it's the worst politician. It's not necessarily.
That's the title of the show, A Slew of Dictators.
So in between those three topics, we're also going to do something that we've grown accustomed to doing on our live shows, based on the 50th, 100th, and now today, which is games. So we've each brought a game to play with the other two people.
This is only so that I can finally be good at one of the games. If I'm running it, that means that I'm not shamed into stupidity by Michael and his really hard quizzes.
Yeah, which we're going to be today for sure, I think.
Definitely.
So let's kick things off with my game.
Awesome.
One of the ones that I love to do is, we do this every once in a while on the show, is political would you rather. So anyone who's played Would You Rather before is, you know, would you rather do this or that? And usually it's a choice between two kind of shitty things. Not necessarily going to be the case today, although one might argue that they are. So I will provide a would you rather. My co-hosts, one of them will pick one side and defend it for about a minute and a half. The other co-host will then have an opportunity to defend the other side. You guys are going to stop the show. Local celebrity, NDP nominee for Strathcona, Paige Gorsak just walked into the back.
We love you, Paige.
I'm totally fanboying over here. and that's, we're going to go through this. I've got three different scenarios. One of them is meant entirely to troll Michael, as is often the case on
yes.
the show. So let's start. Political, would you rather? Sharon,
I'm ready.
You are up first, so
okay.
you'll have the advantage in the first topic.
Perfect. How do you win at this?
The crowd is going to decide who made the best argument.
Okay. Like, how do we win?
That's how we're going to win.
Okay.
So, first, political, would you rather? Sharon, would you rather be Rachel Notley going into her 2019 election?
Okay.
Or Jagmeet Singh going into his 2019 election?
I would rather be Rachel Notley.
And why is that?
Mostly because I think there's a lot more people that like Rachel Notley than there is that like Jagmeet Singh. So I like to be liked, so I would pick Rachel Notley.
Michael? Your response.
Well, if I were Jagmeet Singh, I'd just be living on a prayer, on hope, or something.
Shout out to Bon Jovi.
I think you have to be yes, that's right. I think you have to be optimistic as a politician, even when their chances are that you're going to perform poorly. And I think at this point, optimism is the only thing that's going to be driving Jagmeet Singh. So,
but couldn't you argue that Jagmeet Singh has a lot more time to rebrand his image, and he doesn't have...
For what?
For the upcoming election, so that he has a chance to win. Like, my thinking is Rachel Notley, a lot of that writing's on the wall. I mean, I understand why that would be offensive to NDP supporters, but there's a big push for the UCP and a new government. Jason Kenney has gotten where he's gotten by being an incredibly successful politician, and he's got lots of support, and the polls say that. So if the writing's on the wall, why would you pick Rachel Notley when you have Jagmeet Singh, who potentially does have a future?
Here's what I'll say, and another shout out to Paige, because when I was door knocking for her campaign, I heard a lot of people being like, you know, love Rachel Notley, but my biggest concern about the federal is that we hate Jagmeet Singh. And I heard that on one more than one door. And these are people who are longtime card-holding NDP members, who a lot of them were really dissatisfied with Jagmeet Singh. And so that was my first indication that Jagmeet might be in a lot more trouble than we even think he is.
Yes, I think the trouble is real. If you want to believe poll numbers, that does spell trouble for the NDP and Jagmeet Singh. And, you know, how many times have I brought this up? The man does not have a seat in Parliament. And he's going to run in a by-election, finally, which he may not even win.
When is that by-election?
A serious, chance that he will not win, which would be hugely embarrassing.
But he's made Burnaby his home.
That may be, Elliot, but that doesn't sway voters necessarily, so...
Fair enough. Okay, so obviously Michael didn't do very well in this round. Who thinks that Sharon was the winner of that argument?
Thank you.
Anyone want to cheer for Michael?
Yes.
My mom is such a homer for Michael.
Jagmeet Singh needs the pity vote, sir.
Yeah.
You know,
true that.
Sunday dinner. I thought you were really hard. You and Sharon were really hard on
Michael. We get a lot of flack for being hard on Michael. You play the victim.
Yeah.
Well,
times.
Michael, you'll have an opportunity to redeem yourself in the next political would you rather. And it's a complex one, but it's mostly a simple one, and it's meant to finalize a debate that we've been having for a long time on the show.
Oh, God.
Michael.
Is this about France?
Would you rather, would you rather be a devout Muslim, hijab wearing female school teacher in Saudi Arabia, or a devout Muslim, hijab wearing female school teacher in France?
I would rather be a devout school teacher wearing a hijab in France.
Oh my
and
God!
Is that?
Because unlike Elliot, who is persistent in his hate of the French people and the French country,
here we go.
Despite obviously there are racist groups in every country in the world, including this one, I don't think it's fair to characterize France as a singular entity of racism in Europe. And I would rather live in a leading European nation than a backward Saudi Arabia, who obviously has no problem killing journalists who criticize it.
All right, that's the... Sharon, bring it home for me.
Okay, you know what? I mean, great, Michael. But you know what? I feel like if I was a hijab-wearing woman, I would feel probably comfortable with people who are like me. You know, even if, you know, my country has some struggles, I think living in a country where you're looked at funny, when the government has legislated things against you that are a direct attack on your beliefs and your values, I would rather live at home in Saudi Arabia than in France.
Well, let's see, the government of Saudi Arabia legislated that they're not attacks on that.
Well, you know, we can drive now, so it's okay. And that's a big win.
Alright, audience, who wants to cheer and support Michael in this one? Oh, and for Sharon.
Come on, guys. Yes. In the running.
You have some facts.
You just had to put that in there,
so,
didn't you?
No, and it was a trick question, because since 2004, it's been illegal for anyone to participate in public education with a headscarf on in France.
Wow.
Sorry. I just had to make that.
Mic drop. Show's over.
All right. So I guess this will have to be the defining or deciding, would you rather?
Sure.
Sharon, I'll give it to you first.
Okay.
Everyone,
shouldn't you give it to Michael since he's behind?
Well, no, you both have won one.
Oh, I thought I won that last one.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Not. You had one. There was some enthusiastic.
Thanks, CJ.
Here.
Yeah.
My grandmother did not clap for
you. Oh, come on, Grandma.
She didn't.
My grandfather did.
Well, obviously supports everyone. So there's a certain Ward 6 counselor here in Edmonton. His name is Scott McKean. If you don't know, love him or hate him. In this scenario, you guys will be playing Scott McKean. Sharon, would you rather be Ward 6 Councillor Scott McKean defending bike lanes or Ward 6 Councillor Scott McKean defending supervised injection?
Oh, interesting. This is a funny question coming from you. I would rather be Scott McKean defending bike lanes because it's an easy win. People can get behind bikes, especially in my ward. They're like, woo, let me ride. Not that I would personally be defending this, but I think for Scott McKean, it's an easier win. It's a lot harder to get people around supervised injection sites. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of misconceptions. And, you know, obviously not right. But Scott McKean is going to be a lot more popular because people are like, oh, he rides his moped on that thing, and it's exciting, and he has a beard. So I feel like, I have seen some people riding their mopeds on there. But, yeah, I think it's a lot easier. If I was Scott McKean, I'd be like, this is an easy win, which is literally what he's done this whole time, because it is an easy win for him.
Yes. All right, Michael, you got to defend the supervised
course,
injection.
Of course, the biggest changes in society are never the easiest ones. So
deep, Michael, deep.
I think, of course, it would be difficult, and it is difficult to change people's minds about safe injection sites, but that's why it's important that we have this constructive dialogue. For the betterment of our communities and for the users who obviously need this service so that they don't die. And we already have enough deaths happening every day from abuse of drugs. So, yes, it is a challenge. And would I rather be in the easier position? You know, I think many politicians would rather be in the easier position. But You, amen, I think Michael. Many get in, not all of them, but many politicians get into elected arena because they want to make a change. And so what better way to start making positive change than tackling this very divisive issue?
Wow, you're preaching today, Michael. Wow. Amen.
Holy, someone brought the fire.
Scott McKean should hire you.
All right, who supports sharing?
Right, I was going to cheer
and
for Michael as well.
Michael.
Yeah. Very nice, Michael.
Well,
that was beautiful.
Well done.
I almost cried a little.
Michael, you know what? They need a fellow Italian challenger to Tony Caterina. Michael.
Yeah, there we go. Michael.
Yes, we do know the family.
And that was Political Would You Rather.
Love it. That was fun.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the worst politician. Oh, no, it's the best.
No, it's
no worst.
Worst.
Yeah.
Okay,
worst.
So the worst politician of the year. So, as we said, this is not necessarily the worst person. It is the person who just perhaps had the worst year in advancing their legislative agenda. Perhaps they had other roadblocks. So this is the person who's performed the most poorly, not necessarily the baddest person. That would be too easy, I think. So... Ellie, would you like to start?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, another caveat is that if you've died this year, you can't be made worst politician, even though he probably had a pretty bad year.
Who, George H.W. Bush?
Yeah. Too soon?
Too soon.
John McCain?
You know what?
Too soon?
I mean...
All right, so I'm going to go off the board. This one is going to surprise all of you. I am going to argue this year, the politician who has had the worst year by far is none other than our great Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau.
I don't think that's really surprising.
Oh, is it not?
No.
No. I think it would be surprising coming from me.
No.
Thanks. For those of you who don't know, Elliot has a fascination with Justin Trudeau, which includes you know, a lot of merchandise, calendars,
this is much
bed sheets.
So what has 2018 been but a year of complete scandal and mess for Justin Trudeau? I'm, of course, referring to the Aga Khan scandal that started the year, which caused many issues within his government and started to build a narrative of corruption and misuse of power. That was followed by an India trip that was probably the worst foreign trip I've ever seen a prime minister
really
take
well.
In my life.
Oh, yeah. It was good.
He looked like he was having a good time.
Yeah.
Got a whole new wardrobe.
Great dance moves.
And, of course, we saw Bill Morneau and the ongoing issues, ethics scandal with him and the selling of stock and his dad selling of stock. So that all totaled in a year that ended with the federal Liberal government purchasing a pipeline that was then knocked down by the Supreme Court of Canada. Saying
you mean our pipeline?
Our pipeline. That I contribute $16 to that pipeline, I want you to know. But in doing so, ended up pissing off both sides, because I don't think that there's anyone in Alberta that considers Justin Trudeau a hero, and I don't think there's anyone in BC who thinks that it would be appropriate to buy a pipeline. In addition to all the issues, how people feel across the rest of the country. So I think it's an easy choice this year. I think Justin Trudeau is my nominee for the worst politician of the year.
I like it.
I can't tell if you're being serious or not.
No, I think he is being serious. I agree with you.
I wrote notes and everything. I never write notes.
I think if you look across the country, you'd be hard-pressed to find, even on the premier side, a premier that loves Justin Trudeau, especially when you look at, you know, Ontario, obviously. Then you have BC, Alberta. I don't really know what's going on in the provinces. But Saskatchewan doesn't like Justin Trudeau.
Absolutely.
He's a very unpopular in terms of on a provincial side, right? You know, he doesn't have a lot of allies.
And I think that, you know, the reason why he's still number one in the polls is not have anything to do with him, and more so the lack of capacity from the leaders of the opposition. And
no one knows
and
who
Andrew
Scheer is.
Yeah, and that could change in an election.
But Elliot, he legalized pot this year.
Yeah, that was okay, I guess. I've never touched this stuff.
That's good. Stay drug free. Yeah, I liked it.
All right.
Okay.
Sharon.
So my person for the worst politician of the year is, no surprise, is going to be Jagmeet Singh, the fearless leader of the NDP. So Jagmeet Singh started off his nomination on a high note. He was leader of the party at the convention, 99% approval rating. Everyone was like, woo, this is the future. And very quickly, he dropped off in popularity. People were really dissatisfied with a lot of his policies. He found it really hard to differentiate himself from Justin Trudeau's liberals. And, you know, he's done nothing really to show that he is a person who can take an election and be the official opposition. Again, he doesn't have a seat in Parliament, which is a big deal.
Oh, it's a big deal.
He might not even win the race in Burnaby. And like I said, when you hear from longtime NDP members that, you know, we don't love Jagmeet Singh, I think there's trouble there.
Yeah, what alarms me is the very real possibility that the NDP in the 2019 election could sink to historic lows.
Yeah.
Jack Layton in three consecutive elections raised the number of seats in Parliament for the NDP. Thomas Mulcair obviously dropped the ball, but still had enough of a caucus, especially in Quebec. That is threatened now to
Jagmeet
totally
Singh
evaporate.
Has no luck in Quebec. Not for his,
you know, so
his, you know.
Could we see the NDP?
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Brown doesn't have any support.
Well, whatever the reasons are.
We know the reason.
The NDP is looking to face significant shrinkage in representation in Parliament. And
I was really surprised. In the political Would You Rather, I thought that he was the easy pick over Rachel Notley, and I think you guys have swayed me the other way. And Sharon, what you heard on the Doors, I hadn't heard that yet, and that was shocking to me as well, too, that members of your own party, because that's sort of like the baseline. If your own party doesn't like you, then that's problematic. And that you were hearing that on the Doors, I think that's very telling. And I think the NDP are in big trouble. You're right.
I mean, the argument that you said is that he has time. He really doesn't have that much time when you think about it. I mean, the federal
10 months.
Yeah, that's not that much time.
What bothers me about this whole situation is that I don't think he hasn't done anything wrong. He just hasn't done anything at all.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there was that story that I shared on the show a couple weeks back around, like, Justin Ling, a great freelance reporter in Ottawa, was looking for a comment on legalization of prostitution. And that's like a bread and butter issue for the NDP. That's something that gets your base whipped up. People are excited about that. They walked it back under Mulcair because, you know, he was going to be the next prime minister. Why not take that issue and run with that? The reporter couldn't even get a comment from him for 3 weeks on that story. From this party people, there's just, I think he's running a bit scared or standing still.
And never mind that their donations are at an all-time low. They have very little funds. So thinking about them putting money into local races, into different nominees and constituent races, I think they're going to have a little trouble there.
I have also predicted that after this election, he will not be the leader of the NDP.
Vecchio Poli.
There we go.
All right. Pick for worst politician. Actually, this is 2 years in a row now. I chose this person last year, and she gets the distinction.
I knew you were going to pick this person.
So we go across the pond, and my worst politician is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Theresa May, who's had nothing but a big headache.
It's gotten worse, actually.
And that big headache is, of course, Brexit.
Yeah.
Which has just been a nightmare. And, of course, this year, her government...
Imagine that. You've let a bunch of boomers make a decision for you.
Wow. Shade.
So this year...
Why did you look at, like, your mother when you said that?
I didn't. I was reminded of my grandparents and the greatest generation.
Yes. Pandering.
So, so this year, her government drafted what was called the Chequers Plan, which was the Conservative government. She has a minority in Parliament, and it's a very precarious minority. And she's hoping to present this deal to the European Parliament and also to the British Parliament, of course. Now, this was accepted just few weeks ago by the European Parliament, and it is going to a vote in the British Parliament next week, and it will likely be defeated. And that will also probably spell the fall of her government. It could be another election. If the Labour Party wins, perhaps there might be a second referendum to redo Brexit. You know, it's unfortunate. She's the worst politician. I don't know what she could have done better. She inherited, she asked, you know, she ran to be conservative leader. So she knew what she was getting into, but it has not been easy. Obviously, there's been a number of setbacks. I guess part of you feels sorry for her, but, you know, part of you just says, well, you know, c'est la vie. And that, you know, it's, it, she has been unable to really get hold of this Brexit file. And I don't know, perhaps if we had to do this again next year, let's say, I don't know if she'd even be prime minister even in a few months. So she's had a very rocky road as prime minister, and certainly Brexit will be the legacy that she'll be remembered for.
Yeah, it's hard because I don't think, no matter who had come into her position, Michael, I don't think they would have had a better time there. I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse when it comes to Brexit. And so this situation has just been so complicated from the beginning, and she walked into a losing situation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that Brexit was sold on falsities and things that were just not possible, as many populist movements are, and we've seen that across the world now. And this is the impact of that. I mean, you asked what something better she could have done. I mean, I don't know that there's necessarily anything that is politically viable, except for maybe try and convince the country that they made a mistake and that Brexit wasn't viable and that this is where they're going to end up.
Telling voters that they were wrong.
But then the other part of me says, exactly. Yeah. But then the other part of me says, then, well, don't you have to show the voters that they were wrong, and you got to walk that line and walk through that process? I mean, yeah, it's a really complex and challenging issue, and it's stifled the economy in England, and it's caused, I think, a lot of upset in a younger generation that's, I think, going to lead to further populism. But I think there's this resurgence of like a leftist populism that's occurring as well too. And I think that's all in stark contrast to the original issue here, was that we let boomers make decisions for us.
All right. First it's France, now boomers. Wow.
All right, so we're going to let, we should let the audience have their say, their pick.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
so who believes that...
Who thought Justin Trudeau was the worst politician of the year?
Yeah. My grandfather was all about that.
We know your vote in 2019.
Jagmeet Singh.
Yeah.
Okay. I support that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
I mean, take where's that thing back.
Theresa May.
Yeah.
No one knows. No one knows.
They're all bad.
I mean, fair enough. Okay, right. Now good. My quiz. Okay. I'm very excited.
Is it your quiz?
Yeah, it's mine.
It's yours. Okay.
Yeah. We are saving the best for last.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
The most embarrassing.
Exactly. I want to end this on a low point. Okay, so my...
You might win.
I won't, but thank you so much. So my quiz today is, who said it, Trump or a comic book supervillain? So these are different quotes. Hopefully Google is right, and these are actual quotes.
So you didn't fact check?
Well, I did a little bit, but it was, you know.
Fake news.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Wait. So you guys can vote, and then we'll give the audience a chance to vote as well. All okay. Right. So the first one is, the question is not who is going to let me, it's who is going to stop me. So who do you think said it, Trump or a supervillain? Ellie and Michael?
I think that's a villain.
I think that's Trump. Who kind of is a supervillain? Hey.
Yeah, true.
That's true.
So audience, what do you think, Trump?
Trump.
Supervillain.
Woo!
Michael and the audience are right. It's a supervillain.
Oh. Which one, do you know?
Juggernaut.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds
good. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I was like, I don't know where that's from. Okay, so second one. There are two rules for success in life. Never reveal everything you know. Who said it? Trump or a supervillain?
That or Elliot.
Why are you making me go first?
All right, I think that's from the Art of the Deal book.
Okay.
All right, I'll go with Trump.
Okay, audience?
Trump.
All right. It was actually the Riddler who said it. Yeah. The Riddler said that one. Yeah, the Riddler. Okay.
Well, to be fair, though, Trump is an enigma. So.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, we'll do another one. Okay, so most people think small because they're afraid of success, afraid of making decisions, afraid of winning.
Trump.
Yes, you're right. Woo!
Finally, Jesus.
Okay.
We just got three in a row right now.
All right, so we'll do a couple more. So next one, if you're good at something, never do it for free.
Trump.
I think that's a villain. I think that's Lex Luthor, maybe.
Audience?
Trump.
It is the Joker. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And you were retiring this show.
Right?
I've obviously peaked.
Yeah. And the last one, go for the jugular so that people watching will not want to mess with you. Who said it?
Donald Trump.
Audience?
Trump.
You got it. Whoa. President of the United States, go for the jugular.
I love it. Would go for his
or the that's better than the joke I was going to make.
Yeah. What joke are you going to make?
Go for the pussy.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. Maybe you didn't have to say it.
Last show. We're going out with a bang.
No pun intended.
Karen couldn't even look
yeah.
at me and I said that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Doesn't matter.
He doesn't care. Next category. So now we are going to talk about the best politician. So which politician had the best year?
Michael,
politically?
You went last, so why don't you go first this time?
Okay. So my pick is the new Premier of Quebec, François Legault. Now, obviously, if you win an election, that's a pretty good year for any politician. But François Legault's win was very significant in Quebec this year. So he is the leader of a party called the CAQ, Coalition Avenir Québec, the Coalition for the Future of Quebec. And this is the first time since 1966 that a party other than the Quebec Liberals or the Parti Québécois formed government. So his win is historic, but it also, I chose him as the best politician because of what he said to win this election. He won with a strong majority, and he proposed a number of things that obviously appealed to many Quebecers, mainly cutting the number of immigrants that enter Quebec. Quebec is, I believe, the only province that has direct control over migrants, so he wants to halve that. And he also said that there would be a sort of a French language and values test for new Quebecers to master the French language and to assimilate into the larger Quebec society. And if they didn't pass this exam, well, perhaps an outcome could be an ejection from Quebec. You know, I don't know what else he could have in mind. But certainly he won a resounding majority. The Liberals, who were the government, fell to official opposition and lost quite a bit of seats. But more significantly, the Parti Québécois, which has dominated Quebec politics for the last 40 years, led Quebec through two referendums. One that was within a percentage point of breaking up the country was reduced to under official party status. Their existence is on the brink. Will the Parti Québécois even continue? Do Quebecers want to be independent anymore? Because François Legault is of a breed of Quebec nationalists, so they still want to promote Quebec as unique within Canada, and they still want to defend the Québécois values, but not necessarily as a country. They don't have to be independent to do that. So François Legault is the new Premier of Quebec. He has a decisive majority. He's brought forward a number of controversial issues, and this is certainly a new chapter for Quebec, and I think it will be interesting to see how the government goes forward and its relations with Ottawa, which will always be interesting. So my pick is François Legault.
That's outstanding. You made a really good point.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when we're talking about 3.5 years of doing this show, one of the things that Michael has brought institutionally to the show is a really deep understanding of Quebec politics.
Definitely.
And Quebec history, political history as well, too, which informs his perspective. And it's something that I could never do and couldn't bring, and Michael has brought that week in and week out, and when we've had issues around Quebec,
you know, just like I did now, it's very easy just to sit back and listen to him speak
because he can
take very complex
nice work,
issues and dissect them. So thank you very much. In English.
Very nice. Okay, so mine for best politician is a controversial choice, I think. But I actually decided for mine to pick Rachel Notley. And I have my reasons. So we know what's going to happen, or well, we have a feeling what's going to happen in 2019. And it has been a very hard year for Rachel Notley. But why I picked that she had the best year is because I have never seen a person pull so many tricks out of their bag in the year and twist and turn, able to shift the blame to Ottawa very expertly and basically have this message that she is sticking up for Albertans. She's doing what's right. It started with the fight with John Horgan.
Yeah.
That's his name, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in BC. What's he up to? Anyway, but John Horgan, it started with him in that fight, and I think she was triumphant. She convinced Ottawa to buy the pipeline, which is wild. And then time and time again, even this week when she talked about capping production of oil, she's just always trying, her and her team are finding new and innovative ways to stay on top of it. Some of them haven't worked, some of them have fallen flat, and I don't know if a lot of people are convinced, but it's been really impressive to see the political expertise that she's brought and try to stay fighting, whether you agree with her or not. I think no matter what happens in 2019, you can't say that she didn't work her ass off.
Yeah, I think you made a strong argument. I mean, I think the other thing, just to add to that, is that although the NDP are failing in the polls, are not doing well in the polls next compared to the UCP, Rachel Notley remains more popular than Jason Kenney.
Yeah, definitely.
And if there is a path to victory, which I don't know that there is one.
It's through her leadership.
Yeah. It's through her, yeah, her brand, yeah, and her leadership, as was the last election, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So I could stay on the premier front and do the controversial Doug Ford one, because Doug Ford, I think, has had a good year. But I'm going to go off the board and talk about someone in the United States that maybe not a lot of people have known about. We've talked about a little bit on the show. But someone who certainly inspired me, and I think inspired a lot of different people, mm-hmm, and that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Very nice.
In New York.
Woo!
Who is a first-term congressperson? Congresswoman, I guess, who upset a 10-term Democrat in New York. He was the number 4 ranking Democrat in the United States Congress. He ran a lazy campaign and she beat him in a primary and then went on to win her seat. And she ran on an exclusively progressive platform and voice, and showed that you do not have to play to the middle if you're a progressive left-wing person to have success in politics and to have success in the United States. Now, I will give her that she was in a very democratic area of the state and of the country, but to upset an incumbent of 20 years is something quite substantial, and to do so by being honest.
Mm-hmm.
I want to end ICE. I believe $15 minimum wage is the way to go. Everyone should have, I don't believe in Obamacare, I believe in single payer. I believe everyone is entitled to health care. And I think that has informed a larger conversation on the left about whether progressives need to move to the center in order to get elected, or if they can run on ideas and convince people that good policy is good policy. And she's been a very inspirational to me in my thinking about progressive politics and what I think moving forward. I don't want to speak for Paige, who's in the audience, but I know that there are a lot of similarities between her video and the video that you put out.
She's definitely inspired.
And I think she's inspired a lot of lot of young people, a lot
mm-hmm.
of progressives, but also a lot of women and people of color, which is also incredible as well, too.
Definitely.
And she's now a national voice on a national stage. And a year ago, or maybe even less than that, I believe she was a bartender in New York. So I think that's quite the astronomical rise, and that's my vote for politician of the year.
I like it.
Right on.
I like it.
So, who believes Michael's choice is the best? Sharon went off the board with Rachel Notley.
I did. Controversial.
And Victoria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah. I support that one.
That was fun.
Yeah.
All right.
I like it. Okay.
Okay.
Now for misery.
Now we're moving to my game.
So, oh, God.
Listeners of the show, they...
get out my Google.
They know that I'm
Siri.
With all the names and facts and...
Yeah. The 17th
date
speaker.
And so I have previously on the show created a quiz for Elliot and Sharon. It's a politics history quiz. And so I've created another one for this 150th episode.
Yay.
Yes, there are questions that are difficult. I will admit that. But I don't think it's anything that you two can't get.
Michael, have you seen my record? We actually should go back and see how many questions.
Like
maybe one.
So
you guys should be smarter.
I will say these are often very hard for me as a non-Canadian.
Well, there's so often very hard for me as a Canadian.
Damn it.
There are some American questions.
I won't know those either.
So I have 12 questions here, and 6 for Sharon, 6 for Elliot. And I'm keeping tabs to see who wins. And you guys can also play along and answer. Okay? Okay, so
someone give
first,
me some hand signals back there or something.
Is for Elliot.
Okay,
me.
Elliot.
I've asked this question before, so it's simple. How many senators in Canada?
How many? 108.
Does anybody else want to answer?
No, I wasn't right then.
No, I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
I
right.
said that's your answer.
Does anyone else know
I've
this?
This right.
When you say Gavin, mm-hmm. I think he's right.
Because
it's
not 105
anymore.
Does
it go up?
It's 115.
115.
The more you know.
Okay, so.
Well, that's going to really come in useful in my life.
It did in Michael's.
They're all unelected, remember that.
That's right, okay. That's right.
All right, Sharon. This may seem difficult, but it actually isn't, all right?
Here we go.
Who is the Member of Parliament for Papineau?
Oh, that I know that one.
This is a Right Honourable Member.
Is this like a really easy question?
The Member of Parliament for
it's
Papineau.
Not
is it Trudeau?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yay.
Thank God.
Now, initially I was going to ask you to name Jagmeet Singh's riding, or I forgot, he doesn't do that. Okay, yeah.
You should have put more French stones into
it. And then we backed up. And then Michael took it to another level.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one, this is a little tough.
Geez.
Elliot, what was the first U.S. state, the first state to enter the Union?
I have a guess.
I think Jared would probably know.
I don't know.
Does anybody want to guess?
Obviously, what is it?
I guess.
Virginia.
Yeah,
I was gonna guess Virginia.
Delaware.
Oh.
Is the correct answer.
Jason, nice work. Very nice.
I've written down the date here, and coincidentally, it's the anniversary, December the 6th.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to Delaware.
I'm surprised he didn't ask that.
Yeah.
And what date did it snow in
there? All right. Now to share it.
I'm winning right now, Elliot.
Yeah, your question was easy.
Thank goodness.
I've asked this question before.
Oh, my God. I know what it's going to be, and
you,
I don't know
I told
the answer.
You the answer.
I know
exactly.
Yeah.
The answer, but you should know.
Oh my God.
It's simple. Who is this person? Who is Jeff Regan?
You ask me this all the time.
Jeff
something
Regan is
the
this is the third time
the,
on the show you
is
met.
He the it's something of the parliament, like the House, the Speaker or something or
that's
the other?
Right.
Oh,
right.
My
yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh,
I knew that was going to come back for me.
That's right. So Jeff Regan is the Speaker of the House of Commons. Okay.
I wouldn't have gotten it if you'd asked me who the Speaker of Parliament is.
Yeah, that's what I was
thank you
say.
For
all right, Elliot.
For being nice to me.
Who is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada?
Oh, it's not...
Beverly. It's not Beverly.
It's not Beverly anymore.
That's right.
Who is it, actually?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Does anybody want to guess?
Anyone know?
Does anybody
out
know?
There?
who the top judge in this country is.
Does it start with a U?
No.
Okay.
This is sad.
I'll give you a clue.
This is sad. None of us know this.
He shares a name with a German composer.
Oh, thanks. Great clue. Of course.
Great clue. John is just not. Yeah, that's made it a lot easier.
Yes. What is it?
It's Richard Wagner.
Oh.
He's the Chief Justice.
Oh.
Wow. Where is he from?
He's Canadian.
No, like, which province?
I mean, he's Quebec.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm losing the quiz.
Okay, Sharon.
It's going to get harder now.
Name two federal cabinet ministers and their ministries besides finance.
So there is the immigration minister whose name is, I forgot. there is, this is really hard, like completely blank as soon as this happens. Oh, Krista Freeland. That's her name, right? And
yes.
She, what's her ministry? She did NAFTA.
Foreign Affairs.
Great, thank you. Well, I just had to name the person, not the...
Yeah, you did both.
Oh, okay. And then, who else is in cabinet?
Don't say it.
Don't,
the audience, I'm losing.
Okay.
So hold on. Amarjeet Sohi, and he is now, okay, what is he like? Infrastructure, energy, what
no,
is he
you
like
got
new?
It wrong. He was infrastructure, now he's natural resources.
Energy is close enough. Energy is close enough to natural
okay,
resources.
Well, I'll give you Christia Freeland.
You won't give me Amarjeet?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. I get half a point at least. I named the minister.
No,
that is not fair.
There's one based in the city and you didn't know it.
Amarjeet, I said it.
Whatever.
I get
1.5.
Okay, come
you,
on.
No, I'll give you half. Because you only named Freeland. You didn't name
okay,
the ministry.
Okay, fair.
And I'll give you half for Amarjeet. So that's 1 point.
Oh, my God. Right. This shit is rigged.
Okay.
You're telling me.
Okay.
Don't be a sore loser.
I just said I peaked early.
This is a very interesting question. I actually I was looking through for United States trivia. And this one I found out myself. It's quite interesting.
If you didn't know it, no one knows it.
It's true or false?
All right.
Okay. So listen carefully. It's very interesting. True or false, Elliot? There have been 45 U.S. presidents. However, only 44 men have been president. So there's been 45 presidents, but only 44 men have been president. That true or false? And can you explain why?
I have no idea. I mean, I assume that's true because that's too obscure of a fact not to be.
Yes, it is true. Okay.
I couldn't.
So that is a fact. There's been 45 presidents, but only 44 men have been president. Does anybody know why?
No, I don't know.
I should know why.
Beautiful.
Whoa.
Absolutely.
What was it?
He served two separate terms.
That's right. One president served two non-consecutive terms.
Oh, I was trying to figure out this whole gender thing.
Oh.
There's
no women.
Excellent.
Very nice.
So Grover
Cleveland. He gets like what, half a point?
Yes, he gets half a point.
Yeah.
So Grover Cleveland was the 22nd president and the 24th president. Oh. Served two terms non-consecutive.
Very nice.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
I must have missed that day in school.
Okay.
U.S.
Yeah.
School.
I missed all the days in school, apparently.
So he's counted twice. All right. So Sharon.
Great. Okay.
Canada again. Elliot, I think, would know this one.
Probably.
Who was Canada's longest serving prime minister?
Oh, I definitely don't know this. This is not easy for me. I actually have no idea.
No, okay, does anybody want to guess?
King.
That is correct.
Who is that?
William Lyon Mackenzie King. Does anybody want to guess how long he was prime minister for?
45 years.
Not quite.
23.
Very close, Elliot. 22.
Yeah. Wow.
What years did he serve?
In the 1920s.
He served twice, that's why.
That's right.
Hmm. Yeah.
And through the
That's right.
Oh.
Okay. Elliot.
Huge racist, too.
Weren't they all? Weren't they all?
He had an essay on
it. I think he wrote...
He talked to his mother.
He was...
he liked his
He was the one that wrote in his journal that he was glad that the nuclear bombs were used on, like, the Asian race and not the white race, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, okay. for Elliot.
Thanks, Charlie.
Reverse. Who was Canada's shortest serving prime minister?
Campbell.
Yeah. Not quite. Very good guess, though. Does anybody want to guess?
Joe Clark.
No.
No. Clark, he did the whole thing.
No, this is...
Someone died, I guess.
He died
in office. No.
The only explanation.
No?
No. Very good, but no, not quite.
John somebody.
No.
Has to be a John.
It goes back to 1896. It's Charles Tupper.
Yeah, of course. Shit.
And
that was my second guess.
Does anybody want to
guess? You could have gone true or false. Is that guy a prime minister?
Does anybody want to guess how long he was in office?
3 months. 3 days.
7 months.
Anybody?
Nine months.
I mean, we said a whole bunch of things. Yeah.
70 days.
Oh. What, did 70? He die?
No, he just lost to Wilfrid Laurier. So.
Oh.
So he won leadership and then was prime minister, then went into election and lost to Wilfrid Laurier.
That's right. So his record stands.
Interesting.
Okay,
very
Sharon,
nice.
This one.
You know for something, right?
You're still going.
Okay.
Good at leadership.
This should be very easy for Sharon.
Will it? Is it?
How many members of the U.S. House of Representatives?
Oh.
You know I never get the number ones.
No. Is it both?
The election? Just,
no, just
is
the
it
House
both?
Just the House?
Just the House? It's...
Oh.
There's so many.
What was the...
Yeah, what was the...
Not the number that was contested. But
no,
was,
I yeah. know, but like...
There was a halfway point.
Yeah.
Was
it was one... I want to say the halfway point was something around 125.
No, it's way more than that. 362.
Really?
That's my
guess. No, but they needed to win, okay, yeah. for the majority.
That was my guess.
What did you just say?
362.
Anybody want to guess?
Yeah, I have no idea.
What was that?
225.
525.
530.
Anybody?
435.
Wow. That's so many.
435.
Okay.
Okay, what's the
so
score
the
right now?
So we have three.
Don't I get another question?
I'm just recapping the scores.
Yeah.
3 for Sharon, and
I want this
Elliot has 0.5.
This is the first time this has ever happened. This should be, worth
this
more.
This would have been so much easier.
Yeah.
Okay. Elliot,
exactly.
I designed this question specifically for you.
Aww.
Specifically for you, all right?
France.
Yeah. Beginning with Pierre Trudeau, name the leaders of the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
So, okay, we have Pierre Trudeau.
Chrétien, Martin, Dion, Ignatieff, Ray, and then Trudeau.
Very close. You got them all except for one.
Think.
That's right. Dion. John Turner.
Oh, I missed Turner right at the beginning.
That's right.
Ah.
But I'll give you. But that was an impressive effort. So
yeah.
I'll give you another. I'll give you a point for that. Though.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great.
You put Bob Ray in there too. Very good.
Yeah.
Great job, Elliot.
I know my liberals.
And our final question. That's why. Final question for Sharon. Which U.S. president was a key founder of the Democratic Party?
That's obvious.
So obvious.
He appears on Money.
Okay, I didn't get this many hints.
I'm getting lots of hints.
I have a guess.
Is the audience right?
What
I have a guess.
What is it?
I hear Washington.
Benjamin Franklin was not a president.
Yeah, he invented eyeglasses.
Yeah, okay.
Bifocals.
Lincoln was Republican.
Washington. Yeah.
Washington.
No.
Jackson.
John Adams.
Andrew Jackson.
Very nice.
Very good. He knows his U.S.
Jason.
History.
Jason.
He knows his presidential history.
Honorable mention.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, so the final tally was 3 for Sharon and 1.5 for Ellen.
Nice. finally victorious. Thank you, everyone, for all your help.
And a special shout out to Jason, who should really have all our jobs up here. Jason, you've seen three high-level showdowns. You have to listen to the show when it comes every live show.
Just so he can prove he's smarter than us.
He doesn't need to listen,
though. Okay, very nice. So we're going now as we end our show with the final category, the year-end category, and that is story of the year, political story of the year. What did we think made the most, was amongst the most significant from January to December of 2018?
Sharon, it's your turn.
Yeah, it is my turn. So I picked something very fittingly, I think, related to the Cheeto down south, Donald Trump. And so my story of the year...
Like Michael did last year and just be like, Trump.
Trump was the story of the year.
I stand by that choice.
Okay.
And I'm very proud of that choice, actually.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, so am I. All right, go on.
What's the opposite of progress?
Should I ask?
Progress!
That should have been actually one of the questions on the quiz.
Oh my god. Okay, so my story of the year is something that I feel very horrible that it's something that we're still not talking about, it that the world isn't talking about, is what happened at the border in the United States this year, where border agencies separated and detained children and their families and just sent them to detention centers all across the United States. There are still many, many, many families that have not been reunited. There are parents who have been deported back to their countries, and their children are still in the United States, either in detention centers or just lost in the foster care system to never be reunited with their families again. It is one of the most egregious things that have ever happened in United States history. I think it is awful that we live in 2018 and this was able to happen under the watchful eyes of people who apparently have the best interests of the American people in mind. And the fact that the world, I think, stayed very silent while this was happening. I mean, you know, it was like, oh yeah, Donald Trump, really bad. But Donald Trump has created this atmosphere where the United States is allowed to wreak havoc on people's lives and virtually goes, you know, unaccountable because of the position they are in the world. Every single time I think of those families, I am not a parent at all, but I cannot even imagine children as young as 3 years old, 5 years old, 2 years old, having to stand in front of judges and with a lawyer and try to, you know, advocate for themselves. It's horrible. Yeah. And every time I think that, wow, those children are still not reunited with their parents, and they probably will never be. There's thousands of children and parents who will never be reunited. And this is the world we live in. I think it's awful. I think it's a travesty. And it's amazing that this is still something that we're not talking about. And the American media just has, you know, that's just something that happened this year. People being separated at the border, cool.
I mean, I think that, you know, you're right to single out Trump in that, but I hope Jeff Sessions burns in hell for what he did to those kids.
Rightfully so. So that's my story of the year.
All right.
Michael, go ahead.
Okay. This is a story, I think, that could have been chosen in any of the previous years. But I think it really has a real escalation this year, and that is the new Cold War. Mm. And there is obviously a very tense showdown going on between the West and any democratic nation and Vladimir Putin's Russia. And this year, amongst the episodes that we saw in this Cold War, which the UN Secretary General labeled it as such, it is a new Cold War happening, was the audacious attempt to kill a former Russian spy in Salisbury, England. His name was Sergei Skripal. And according to British intelligence and, you know, most of Western intelligence, Vladimir Putin ordered the killing of Sergei Skripal. And he was poisoned with a deadly nerve agent called Novichok, which struck him and his daughter. And they were both in intensive care for weeks. It didn't look like they were going to make it. Somehow they pulled through. But just to think that not only would Vladimir Putin kill an opponent, which he's been tied to, he's been, you know, accused of trying to kill other killing other opponents, but to do so outside of Russia, in a foreign country. We've seen the continued harassing of Ukraine. It just recently, the Russian Navy captured Ukrainian ships in the Black Sea.
Yeah.
Is taunting, is really picking a fight with Ukraine. We've seen the continued accusations of meddling in the Russian election, despite Donald Trump's saying, I don't see why it would be Russia, in that infamous summit in Helsinki. And of course, I brought
he
my shirt
meant
there.
Why it wouldn't be Russia.
That's right. Yeah. There we have little baby Trump on the shoulders of daddy Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin, I think, has been, frankly, I think, has been the story of the year for a long, long time. And his actions are continued to really be a sore spot for many in the West. And this Cold War is escalating. And he just got elected this year to another 6-year term.
So fair election, of course.
That's right. Yeah. He's going to be in there until 2024. He was first elected in the year 2000. So quarter century of pretty much uninterrupted power. He's a goon. He's certainly one of the most fascinating figures I think we've all seen in a long time. So my story of the year is the new Cold War.
Very fitting.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
I think Jason would agree with me. There's a bit of Russophobia. So we got kids in cages and a new Cold War. 2018's been a great year.
It's been lovely.
So I'm going to lighten it up a little bit with my political story of the year, because I think it was certainly the political story of the year here in Canada, and I think it's going to make rounds it's going to be really influential for a long time, and that is, of course, the legalization of cannabis here in Canada. And unlike the singular story of border crossings, which is horrendous, and the overarching influence of Russia, I think that it would be impossible to talk about it 2018 without talking about the legalization of cannabis. It dominated our media from the beginning of the year when in anticipation of legalization, and with a huge lead up to the actual legalization and all of the coverage and stories that went around that happening. And then afterwards as well, as we've seen a lack of supply, turns out more people smoke pot than we thought.
The world didn't fall apart.
A whole new industry that's created that's almost exclusively Canadian, and we're the front runners on that. I think that there's major economic impacts with this industry that we have yet to see the full bore right now. I mean, all we talked about this year was, what did you buy into Aurora, it seemed like. And that's been a conversation that's been had basically all year and weekly and across all media channels, all languages across our country. And I mean, I was in Israel and we met some friends at a bar, and the moment they found out that we were Canadian, they said, you guys are going to legalize pot? And we're like, yeah. And then we went out and smoked pot.
Yeah.
I mean, I just watched it.
Yeah. Fair.
But no, sounds but there was realistic. Like, that it's like, it's, I think, internationally, it's also defining Canada as well, too. And I think it's a huge story that's lasted the entire year. And that's why I think it's the best political story of the year.
And now all they need to do is look at the records of people who've been jailed and
criminalized. Well, yeah, there's been so many subsequent stories
yeah.
about it. That's what I mean, yeah. right? Like, whether it's the industry itself or how other countries are dealing with it, I think there's a bunch of conversations around that. So, anyway, that's my political story of the year.
Fitting that it's your story, hey?
I mean,
Elliot has never touched this stuff.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. From Michael.
A very pure character.
If you listen to the episode in the week that the weed was legalized, that's an interesting episode for Elliot.
Interesting episode. His mother.
Yeah, it was a great week. Right? Yeah. Fun time. I forgot to put Trump Watch into it when I was
The audio was all over the place.
So, who thinks Sharon's story?
Like, this is a weird one to vote on. I think it's like very, like, yeah, I don't, yeah.
You guys don't
you just
want
to win. I think it was, yeah. I don't know if we need to vote on kids in cages.
I just wanted to know who was going to clap for kids in cages.
Yeah.
It was more about what I knew about you.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's it. We're going to go into the
7-8-0. It's time for our 7-8-0s.
Michael, can you do the
7-8-0s? Right, so typically we... On our 7-8-0s, we give just a short little shout-out on things of interest to us personally, but for this 150th special finale, we're going to dedicate our 7-8-0s as thank yous to a number of people and groups. So let's start our thank yous. Let's start with the Alberta Podcast Network.
Woo-hoo!
And its president.
Powered by ATV.
Powered by ATV. And its president.
Aaron Ireland is in the house. Other local celebrity. I think maybe we should talk about Karen and how important she's been to us as a show. First of all, before we even knew what we were doing, Karen somehow found our podcast somewhere and published us
in her blog, right?
Seen and Heard, way back in the day. And I remember we got tagged in something. What is this? Seen and Heard? And it's like this whole new thing. And really encouraged us, I think, to continue to do the show, because it was like, oh, now it's not just Nina and Liz listening. There's like more people. And Sharon at that point.
Yeah,
but
number
like,
one
yeah,
fan.
Sharon, and then, of course, she had us on her podcast. She's turned that into an outstanding venture, the Alberta Podcast Network, which is, of course, powered by ATV. But it's really, really, really powered by Karen's fierce determination to make Alberta content and support Alberta content. And we have been a beneficiary of that ferocity, and we are eternally grateful for everything you've done for us, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And then next, I think we want to thank Jeff from G Radio. And I think, Elliot, you and Michael have a lot more to say about Jeff than I do, since he's the one who kind of got the ball rolling on a lot of airing of the show.
Even before the Alberta Podcast Network, Jeff Williams, who a local entrepreneur who runs G Radio, which is an online radio which focuses on Edmonton-based content, local content, also found our show. And also found it to at least be amusing, if not informative. And he approached us and said, as I am building a lineup for my radio station, I would like to have your show as part of it. So it was a very humbling and very gracious move on his part. And he encouraged us to go weekly.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the guy at Facebook who's got rid of the Facebook and just made a Facebook. That's like Jeff Williams. They just go weekly.
Yeah.
And that was really important for us, too.
Right. Okay, and who else do we have?
We have the Grizzlar, everybody! We want to thank our lovely host for having us here today. Outstanding coffee, a downtown-based business that is community centered, it wants to be part of the solution and not separate from it. We love you guys. We're going to continue to come here, and I think you guys all should too. It's super close to Grant McEwen, 109th Street between 104th Ave and 105th Ave? 105th and 106th. There's also a pot shop next door that's coming in, maybe.
All
so
right,
that's
cool,
cool
Elliot.
I'll blend it all loose, 150.
Yeah. I think is there any?
Yes, we have a few more.
Okay.
A few friends, Nathan, Herman, and Jordan, of course, who all contributed to our show in some way.
Yeah, we're using two of Herman's mics and one of Nathan's mics, but they've been longtime supporters of the
show.
And Herman's an outstanding. He's got the Modern Manhood podcast.
Yep.
If you're not listening to it, you should be. Another proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, and so he was a big influential. Nathan, obviously, who supplied some stuff And Jordan, our BC correspondent, who came on probably more than anyone else to talk about BC elections, and incredibly opinionated and good friend to the show. So that's a big one.
And then, of course, all of you, our listeners. Of course, there wouldn't be a show if we'd be talking to each other and nobody would be listening. We've had our listeners, we've had our supporters for 3 years, 150 episodes. I looked into this. We have more episodes than Breaking Bad. We have more episodes than Sex and the City. Than Arrested Development.
Wow.
So we have a good about 5 seasons worth, if you go by TV years.
I love it.
Of content.
Gotta go into syndication now.
So thank you to our listeners and to all our supporters who have driven us to make this show better. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Hold on. I have one last thing to say. I think I speak for everyone here when I turn to both of you and say thank you, because you two 3 years ago had this wild idea to start just ranting on air about politics, putting those poli-sci classes and degrees to use. And you created something really special. and something that people really fell in love with that was exciting to do. I think there's a reason why it lasted as long as you did, as long as it did, because of both of you's leadership and expertise and skills and smarts. And you brought me along, which I'm always eternally grateful. It's been so fun to be in these chairs with you. Not these specifically, but, you know, chairs in general. So thank you to both of you. You are the creators, and you are wonderful. Yeah.
Now I'm going to turn this around.
All right.
There's this stat out there that lingers that people should know about, where it usually takes a woman 8 times more or 10 times more attempts and asks to run for politics. So I think we should all stand up and say, on the count of three, Sharon, run for something. One, two, three. Sharon, run for something.
All right, all right. Tell Justin Trudeau to give me my citizenship.
Yeah, you gotta get on that. And you're not going to do it on Canadian history, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely not.
So we do have a mic set up. If anyone has any questions, we want to end the show with that. We can totally do that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, let's call it a night. We got 15 minutes here, and a lineup is forming.
Yeah, scary. Is this going to be as hard as Michael's trivia?
It's a pretty hard-hitting question. First, I think an omission from the story of the year is that the high-level showdown is ending. I think that's the story of the year.
Thank you.
So in that vein, can you talk about the one quality that you think your co-hosts bring to the show the most?
Aww.
And the one you won't miss about recording.
Yes. Oh, I can go first. Okay. So the one quality... No, I'll start with the bad first. So the one thing I won't miss is not being, like, trying to walk on eggshells and not making any semblance of sound, because Elliot gets very angry at Michael and I. Sometimes we're robbed of food and sustenance.
If Sharon had her way...
You know, I'm a clumsy person, and it's really hard for me. And Michael, if I had a dollar for every single time you said, everyone knows this blank, that would be hilarious. It's one of those things that's like not even something I won't miss. It's just hilarious. It's my favorite thing about you, because the most obscure things that you think we would know, we don't. So that's my favorite. And then my favorite thing about both of these two, Elliot, I think the one thing is Elliot is never afraid to play the other side of the political spectrum. I've had many people actually ask me if Elliot's like some far right person. They're like, so like your friend Elliot. I'm like, no, like a lot of times he's forced to argue on
build
sides
wall, yeah,
because of Michael and I's radical leftist politics. So thank you, Elliot, for taking one for the team and making everyone I know think you're voting for Andrew Scheer next year. And then Michael, of course, I think this might be Elliot's, how educational you are. You teach me something every single week, and being one of your co-hosts has, I have so many facts now. Not that I keep them, because obviously look how good I did at the quiz, but you know, I have all the facts now.
I'll go next. The one thing I won't miss about doing the show every week is having to make sure my house is like clean and presentable enough for Michael and Sharon to come over. And at times it was like nearly
not. We make
not
you
there.
Better.
It was nearly not there. But that's a pretty minuscule thing. I think, let me start with Sharon. I don't know anyone who is more, I mean, she just said she's, you know, technically not a citizen of our country, although working towards that. But I don't know anyone that is more invested in her community in all ways. She is so knowledgeable about everything that's going on in and around her community and in and around her city. She's involved in her local community league. She's involved in the Junior League of Edmonton. She door knocked for Paige, my goodness. She finds time to do things that she cares about and that she's engaged with. It's why she needs to run for something, because she understands the city, and she's very, very smart, and she's committed to making the place in which she lives better. And that is a remarkable feature of Sharon, and
thanks, Elliot.
Pushes me to be more engaged and do more things like that, because it's people like Sharon that we need to be leaders in our community, and I think that that is a piece of that. For Michael, Michael is so the thing. Michael and I met on the train, and we met on the train, and we talk every
I didn't know that.
Oh, no, we didn't meet up.
We met in class, but we talked on the train.
Yeah.
And Michael was the first person that I ever met who knew more about politics than me, that knew more about history than me, and that could just slaughter me in an argument. And as much as Michael, you think this friendship is mutual, I worked really hard to be your friend because you were so cool to be around. And it was like, you're the reason you're the person I picked up the phone and said, I figured out how to do podcasts. Let's do a politics podcast. Do you want to do it with me? And it's because you make me a better man every day in lots of different ways. You're insanely smart, insanely gifted, know a ton about music and art and history and France, and you still... but you do it with such a good, kind heart and from such a loving place, and it's such an I feel very privileged to be your friend, and one of the things that's going to be the hardest, I think, is not having these two people come to my house every week. It's an excuse to hang out with these two, and I feel very deeply about that and passionate about that, so...
Adorable.
Yeah. Well, how do I follow that?
Yeah. You didn't say the two things you won't miss.
Well, keeping my house clean and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Thank you.
Keeping your house clean.
Well, I won't miss Elliot's trolling. He is very good at that. Elliot is
the thing I thanked Elliot for is the thing that you're...
Well, I
feel like
Elliot, you know...
Amazing.
I love Elliot, but he can be a son of a bitch.
Wow, she's sitting right there.
That's not what I meant. He can be a bastard, okay? He can be a real bastard. A despicable person. There were some times where, you know, we had arguments on the show and people actually thought that there was something serious going on.
Yeah,
you know?
There was.
So I won't miss that. But, you know, if you want to talk about a good heart, then Elliot is certainly the one with the softest heart.
Oh, definitely.
And his intelligence is, says that I may know historical facts and politics, but Elliot is very good. What I don't have is a really good analysis of how parties should be acting,
mm-hmm.
what they should or shouldn't say, optics. He's a very good strategist, mm-hmm. and I think that formula worked well on our show. If I were to provide a historic background or
mm-hmm.
facts, then Elliot could rebound with, you know, how this looked, what the party should do next. He's a very good strategist. He's a very good political thinker, and it's been an absolute privilege to work with you. Of course, we did it together alone for the first 80 or so episodes before Sharon joined us. And as he said, Elliot called me when we started this show. And I know that Elliot has a number of good friends who, you know, are also politically inclined, but he chose to call me.
Aww.
So I, you know, thank you for that. Thank you for including me in this project and look where it's taken us.
Mm-hmm.
And for Sharon, you have brought a very unique lens to the show, especially, I think, around American politics. And as much as we hated to talk about him every week with Donald Trump, you always brought very good issues for Trump Watch. As Elliot says, you're a very informed person, even if you're not a Canadian or an American. You're one of the most engaged people I've met, and it's been a great privilege. So I will not miss Elliot's two-faced, you know, being an asshole type, but I will certainly miss the show and the learning that we have all had together.
Adorbs. Thanks for the soft question, Trenton.
Thanks.
No, keep it coming.
Hi, long-time listener.
Yes, hi, Nathan.
Nathaniel actually appeared twice on our show.
Yeah, our Cuba expert.
Right, that's
Where's
right.
the cigars, Ellie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it. Wow.
So we're going to go from the heart, and we're going to kind of switch over to dictators.
Love it.
With the my question is, you know, with the rise of, you know, cult-like leaders such as Bolsonaro in Brazil, Rodrigo Duterte, you have Europe kind of seeming like one crisis away from exploding with far-right politics. And you have very recent images of the G20 of Vladimir Putin and Prince Mohammed, you know, high-fiving, basically saying, fuck you to human rights, essentially. are we seeing the rise of the new dictator? Is there going to be like a new dictator club like the 70s and 80s where you had Fidel Castro with Muammar Gaddafi skipping in flowers, or is it going to be a different?
I think it's a great question. I think that what you're seeing internationally is that there's a major power shift going on in front of our eyes, and it's from Western democracies rooted in the United States and in Europe to areas of the world less democratic, and I think namely China. And I think China has become a country that, and is a country as we know, that acts internationally in a way that is almost always, is exclusively beneficial to China. And if you have a world superpower that doesn't feel impacted by the rise of undemocratic leaders, that isn't necessarily impacted by what's going on in Brazil or what's going on in Saudi Arabia necessarily, or maintain some sort of relationship with Putin, I think that you're starting to see evidence of that power shift in that outcome. And it's a symptom of a bunch of different things, but I think that top level, that's my initial analysis on why the world is turning in that way. And I think as long as China continues to be the major power broker in the world and take on that role, yes, you will see a new class of dictator and dictators that are more emboldened to murder people in the streets in London. Yeah. Or,
but we don't call them dictators, and that's the thing. I don't think anyone really calls Vladimir Putin a dictator, right? They call them strongmen. They have different words for them. Even though it's, you know, I think we are going to see a rise in this, I think we're not calling them by their name, which is why they're able to, you know, have such a long hold and maybe more of a hold than in the past, because, you know, a dictator was a dictator. We know they were doing horrible things, but especially Putin and as well as China, you know, has created this new era where dictators are a little bit more on the sly, you know? A lot of people don't call them that, but they're able to, you know, perform
like
that.
Bonesaw in an embassy isn't exactly a sly.
Yeah. True.
And I think actually one of the reasons why perhaps we don't necessarily call them dictators is because what we've traditionally called dictators, these people are subverting democracy and they're jailing opponents, but they're not Stalin, per se.
Yeah.
You know, they're not killing millions of people.
Genocide isn't happening necessarily.
That's right. It's not Hitler or Pol Pot or Idi Amin type of thing. They are still, obviously, huge barriers in the face of democracy. They are still jailing opponents. They are still abusing human rights. But I think we have this image in our mind of the dictator. Oh, it's Joseph Stalin. So we don't use the term dictator. But there is the strong man, certainly. I mean, you know, when we were talking about the worst politician of the year, do you know who the real worst politician of the year? It is Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. It is Vladimir Putin. It is Rodrigo Duterte. It is, Sisi in Egypt. It is, Donald Trump, to an extent, right? So they exist. They're called something different. I guess it's, what's the saying? Like, by any other name?
Yeah.
These are all wolves in sheep's clothing.
Definitely. Yeah. Great question, Daniel. Yeah.
Anyone else?
Any other questions?
I was getting tired.
Open mic. Last chance. This is your last chance. Any questions?
It's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you,
Grizzly, for hosting us. 150 episodes. We're really proud of it. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Good night.
Adios.
Keep clapping.
Wow,
Elliot.
I'm
working on it. I can't hear you.
Come on, Elliot. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. Come on. Wow, Elliot.
I almost just put the Trump watch in.
All right.
Thank you for coming, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.